hand on the wall, what you're doing is you're just trying to extend and spread your arms out as much as possible. And you want to try to feel the back of your arms up against the wall. A lot of people, our shoulders are so tight that we can't even raise our arms up and press them up against the wall. So you want to do that, again, as often as you can. 5 to 10 reps are good. Just get a good stretch in. Sometimes they do them in the morning, sometimes the afternoon, sometimes all of the above. The important thing is, again, be more mindful of what you're doing. Now, you can perform these same kind of exercises while sitting. You can do a variation of the abundance posture pose right from your desk. So you want to think about the same way that we did it standing. So what you do is you sit with your triceps parallel to the ground and your forearms perpendicular to the ground. And you just stretch your arms out from there. You open your chest up, right? That's all you're doing. You're extending your arms out. You're raising your head up. You're raising your chest up. And you're leaning back again almost as if you're falling back. The only difference between this and the standing variation is that you're actually sitting down so that your legs aren't stretched out as in the other ones. So again, expand your arms out as widely as you can. Open up your whole chest. Imagine you're looking up at something that's above and slightly behind you. As you do that, you will feel your body start to align. Again, if you want pictures, go to gorillamindset.com/posture. Now, that page is password protected. It's only for book readers. So the password is Cernovich, and that is case sensitive. Capital C and then E-R-N-O-V-I-C-H. Thanks again. Chapter 9, Mindset is Money. Make more, save more, and invest more intelligently. Now, you might say, why are we going to talk about money in a book about mindset? And again, because everything is sort of interconnected. If you have money, I'm not talking about being rich necessarily, but if you have enough money that you're not going to worry about your rent, you're not going to worry about your next meal, is that going to improve your mood? Is that going to improve your state? Is it going to be easier to focus? Of course it is. So it's very hard to have the right mindset if you're worried about money, you're worried about your next meal, you're worried about how you're going to feed your children. That's all very stressful. What we want to do is improve your money situation, though, by changing your mindset. Again, always think of these things as reciprocal. Everything is connected. They come together. So the first gorilla mindset shift is that money is like oxygen. Without it, you will die. Money is not something you want. It is something you need. Without money, it is simply impossible to live. Yet somewhere along the line, we were told that money is evil. I mean, my relationship with money was complicated. I grew up poor, so I really didn't have any sense of what money was or how people made it. I honestly believed that the only way to get rich was to cheat people. I thought you had to steal to make money because, again, I had no idea what it was. I was also too afraid to believe in myself or to take the risks it took to hit it big. So I had no idea. I didn't believe in myself, and if you don't believe in yourself, you're never going to make a lot of money. But my relationship changed in college, and it was kind of a small thing looking back, but at the time it was catastrophe. So a friend of mine asked me if he could borrow my car. I said, sure thing, no big deal. It was just an old Ford Escort station wagon, probably a $500 or $600 car, but it got me to work, and I had to work my way through college. No problem. Get it back to me at the end of the day. Well, you know what happened next. I was in college, so I didn't foresee this happening. My friend crashed my car. Now, was it his fault? Was it my fault for lending it to him? We don't think about that. We don't think about fault. The point is, I was in a bad situation. My car was totaled beyond repair. I was powerless. I had to go to work. How am I going to make money? I have to pay my bills. What am I going to do? There was no public transportation where I lived. A girl who lived near me had to drive me to work. One day I thought to myself, this will be the last time I never have money. That was horrible. Again, in the grand scheme of things, was it a big deal? No, but at the time it was a big concern. And that was when I changed my view on money. Another gorilla mindset shift is that money is neither good nor evil. The pursuit of money is far from the root of evil. Having money allows you to do good in the world. If you have money, you don't have to compromise your values. I actually learned that when you make money, you can be honest because you don't have to lie. You don't have to take shortcuts because you're not always trying to hit that next scam, right? That next scheme. You have that stability. Money also gives you access to better health care, better food, and you can donate money to charity. So I always tell people who say money is evil, do this experiment. Go make a lot of money. If you decide that it's a bad thing, give it all away. But here's what you find. Once you start making money, you can actually do a lot of good in the world. I made my living as a lawyer, and I was able to do my podcast for free and my website for free because I had some money saved up from being a lawyer. If I hadn't, I hadn't been able to help the people I've been able to help with my writing and with my speaking. Also, you know where the New York Public Library came from? It came from greedy capitalists. They donated the money for the library. So yes, you can make money honest and ethically. You can also use your money to do a lot of good in the world. And yeah, you can cheat people, or you can use your money to buy drugs, but money is, again, neither good nor evil. It isn't that money is evil. It's whether you're good or whether you're evil. So you can use it accordingly. Now, there are two components to acquiring wealth: making money and saving money. Now, that might sound a little simplistic, but make the gorilla mindset shift. When it comes to money, it's not what you make. It's what you make and what you keep. Again, why does that seem like a big point? There was a huge book called The Millionaire Next Door that changed the way a lot of people thought about money. And the authors of The Millionaire Next Door, they learned some startling facts. Those of us that we think of are rich were actually deep in debt. And those of us that we viewed as maybe working class and middle class were often rich. What they learned was that many plastic surgeons, doctors, and investment bankers spent all of their money and more. They were actually in debt. Bigger house, bigger car, boats, yachts. So high-income earners often spend all that they made and then some. And we all tend to do that, right? We make more money and then we spend more of it too. We grow into our incomes. Well, there were a lot of people too who seemed that they were of modest means, who had a lot of money, and that's because they made money and they stashed it away. So how can we do it? How can we think about money, right? How can we save more money? Well, I'm not going to just say buy a budget, right? Buy a budget, start a budget. That's sort of basic advice. I want to make a mindset shift with you, right? Stop attempting to buy status. A lot of what we buy isn't something we need. We just want to impress other people. Now, I'm not a minimalist. I own the newest MacBook. I have great headphones. I actually have 3 pairs because I'm a kind of an audiophile. And I buy the best microphone for my podcast. Right now, I'm in a recording studio. So I'm not a minimalist or saying don't buy anything. But think about it. When that iPhone comes out, do you actually need the new iPhone or do you buy it for that cool factor? If you want a great example of that, look at Beats by Dre. By all objective measures, Beats by Dre are inferior headphones. There are way better headphones by Sennheiser, Audio Technica, V-Moda, and other brands that blow them away by objective sound quality. But why do people buy those Beats by Dre? They buy it for the status. So even though they're headphones, they want that logo because people were convinced that if you have these headphones, you can afford expensive headphones. I'll say, for example, I have a pair of $300 headphones, the V-Moda CrossFade 100s. Great headphones. Nobody knows they cost $300, though, because they don't have that marketing machine behind them. But if I wear Beats by Dre, then people know they're $300, right? So that's what you're doing. You're buying things to signal status to people. Is that really what you want to do? So you can save a lot of money by not trying to buy status. Now, make no mistake. People will judge you by how you dress, how you look, and you do want to be professional and look good. So I'm not saying be a bum or don't look nice, but just ask yourself when you're buying something, am I buying it just to impress people? Am I working harder just so that people know that I can afford a $300 headphones? And what does that really get you, right? What does that get you in life if you have $300 headphones and people know that they cost $300? It just buys you crappy headphones. And what kind of people are even impressed by that? Are they people you want in your life? So before buying something, ask yourself, is the product actually going to enhance your life? Are you buying the product for you or to impress other people? Another thing you want to ask yourself is, are you spending your money as a way to self-medicate? Do you spend it mindlessly? Do you think you need more money because, as George Carlin quipped, you want to buy things you don't need to impress people you don't like? That very often happens to us. What happens is we work very hard, and then we say to ourselves, well, what's the point of having this money? What's the point of working in a job I don't like? Why should I work this hard if I don't spend it? But what are you doing? You're medicating yourself, right? Well, maybe you want to stop thinking about that way, right? Maybe you don't want to buy things to self-medicate. Maybe you want to say, instead of spending this money, because what's the point of working a job I hate if I don't spend it? You could say, well, I should save this money, because what's the point of spending my money when I know that it'll keep me trapped in a job I hate? See how that mindset, that shift works? So this isn't just, oh, stick to a budget, save 10% of your income. That's all, it's all good stuff, but that isn't how I want you to think. I want you to think, why are you spending your money? Why are you buying it? Are you buying something to make you better? Are you buying something to improve your life? Or are you just kind of spending it mindlessly and not caring? Or maybe you're buying it again for the status. That's what you want to think of. Perhaps consumerism is acting as an opiate for your life. If that's the case, ask yourself, maybe I should change my life. So make the gorilla mindset shift. Do you need more money, or do you think you need more money to escape your current unhappy situation? Well, maybe if you change your current situation in other ways, you wouldn't feel the need to make more money. Now, again, I am not attacking money. To the contrary, I love money. I want to make more money this year. I want to make more money next year. And I want to have as much money as possible. Money is great, and you should go make as much money as you possibly can and then some. But the question is, why are you making it? Why do you want it? What need do you think it'll really fulfill? And is it going to actually fulfill that need? Be more conscious and be more mindful. So the best way, ironically, to save money is to stop using money as medication and stop using it as status. So now we're going to talk about how you can make more money. We've talked a little bit about how to save money. In the same line of thought, how can you make more money? Now, I'm not here to say, get a better job, get a better this, get a better that, because that's the kind of boring stuff that you guys can find anywhere, and that's not what I'm here to do. We're big picture thinking, right? Mindset shifts. So the first mindset shift you want to make, if you want to make more money, abundance mindset. You see money everywhere. You live in a world of abundant resources. You see wealth and opportunity everywhere. When you make that shift, and I know it because I made it my own life and I've helped so many other people make it, the world looks different. Because again, you can view the world as being scarce or as abundant. You can say, there are no opportunities. What if I do? If I lose my job, what about this? If that's what you choose to focus on, that's the world you're going to see. The world is either scarce beyond measure or abundant beyond measure. It's all in how you choose to look at it. Another mindset shift you can make is, think like a producer rather than a consumer. And what do I mean by that? Well, have you ever bought something? Well, of course, right? You bought this book. You're listening to this book. I'm a consumer too. I buy a lot of books. I go to seminars. I buy headphones. So I'm not anti-consumer. I'm anti-mindless consumer. So be a mindful consumer. Why did you buy this book? Well, that's how you think like a consumer. You bought this book, or rather, that's how you think like a producer. You bought this book because you're thinking, well, it's going to make me a better life. Well, how did I sell it to you? What did I do? Think about all those steps. Well, clearly I established credibility. I wrote for free. I've done podcasts for free. You know who I am. I did all that. Well, why can't you do it? You can. You can help people have a better life. You have value to offer the world. And that's why you just want to start thinking about things. When you go into a store, whenever I buy something, and again, I'm not a minimalist, but when I buy something, I think, well, why did I buy that? What brought me into the store? Why did I come here? Why do I come back here? Why do I buy these kinds of products? Because then so the producer's mindset, because then I start thinking, well, why can't I do that too, right? Why can't I do it? I read books. Well, why can't I write a book? Well, I listen to audiobooks. Why can't I do an audiobook? I listen to podcasts. Why can't I do a podcast, right? Whatever your dream is, it doesn't matter. Maybe you want to open a coffee shop. That's what you do. Well, why can't you do it? Well, it's because you're thinking about things like a mindless consumer. Well, I just sort of showed up and bought it here, and I don't even know why I did it. But when you think about a producer, you think, well, yeah, I mean, I know why I came in here, the storefront, the location, the service. And then you take those skills and you take that mindset into any kind of business. So that is a very powerful fundamental mindset shift you can make. Another thing you can do is get in between transactions. Middlemen have a bad reputation. Everybody always says, skip the middleman, skip the middleman. But a middleman brings real value to people because it brings together buyers and sellers who might not have otherwise met. I'll give you an example. I'm in affiliate marketing. I am a middleman. I write product reviews. I write book reviews. When somebody buys a product after reading my review, sometimes I get a commission, and that's why I always disclose those. I'll say, well, I'm getting a commission here, because then people can say, well, okay, maybe I should discredit you, or maybe I give you more credit, but I leave that up to the consumer. So I'm a middleman, but I bring value to buyers and sellers. If I introduce you to something you never heard of and it can improve your life, then I've made your life better if you buy it. Well, if the seller had never found you or wouldn't have found you, well, you never would have got that sale. So I've made the seller's life better. So think of yourself as a middleman. How can you be a middleman? I even have middlemen working for me. I have a book on juicing and people get a 50% affiliate commission. So every time somebody sells the book from a review that they write, they get a 50% commission. Gorilla Mindset will have an affiliate commission. So when people sell Gorilla Mindset, they get a commission. And I love my middlemen. Well, I know that if you sell the book for me, I probably wouldn't have sold it. So why would I not like a middleman? So again, start thinking, well, how can I get in between transactions? And how can I add value to the buyer and to the seller? Next, make this gorilla mindset shift. It's a limiting belief that you have nothing of value to share. People do value what you have to say. They do value your answers. So start getting paid for giving answers. In Wall Street, on a much grander scale, they make billions of dollars putting buyers and sellers together. They're called market makers. You don't have to be on Wall Street to be a market maker. Again, just start thinking, how can I put two people together? How can I add value to both parties and put people together who had never met each other? And then you take a commission. That's all you do. Another thing you can do is start scaling you. This is big. The world is wired. Everybody's on YouTube. Everybody's on Google. You have skills that you can share with the world. It doesn't matter who you are. You could be a gardener. You could be a personal trainer. You could be a mechanic. But chances are you're not scaling the information. You're keeping it bottled up inside you. Or perhaps you only share that information via word of mouth with a friend. The vast majority of us are not scaling our knowledge, and that's a big mistake. A friend of mine, he gives seminars on how to organize your Gmail. A lot of us have very cluttered inboxes. I don't know how to create filters. I don't know how to make folders. I don't know how to do anything. Well, his seminar will clean up your inbox in 60 minutes, and he can solve all your problems. He's given this presentation so many times, but you know what he's never done? He's never recorded it. By recording this conversation, he would scale his knowledge. He could always sell that to people for information, or he could upload it to YouTube as a way to market himself. That way, when people were looking at how to organize my Gmail, they would find him, and he runs an IT consultancy. So maybe that leads to something else. But the point is, he's going to do it anyway. He's going to teach the seminar. Just spend a little bit of extra time to record it, edit it, and upload it, and now you've scaled your information. The great thing about the internet is you can scale any kind of business. You can do SEO. SEO gets all this voodoo stuff attached to it, and that's because a lot of people want to sell you on junk. But SEO just means search engine optimization, and it means you create content that the search engines, i.e. Google, will like. Well, the number one search engine is Google, and the number two search engine is YouTube. So here's a real quick SEO tip that you can use for basically any business. I actually helped a guy who was a landscaper, and he grew his business this way. Here's all I did. I said, take your guys out and record them doing whatever it is they're doing. Cutting shrubs, killing weeds, it doesn't matter. Just record it. And by the way, if you have an iPhone, you have better technology than they had in the recording studios 30 or 40 years ago. Record it. When you record it, upload it to YouTube. Title it whatever the name of your city is and title it whatever you're doing. It could be what weeds are you killing in your area. How to kill bluegrass in North Dakota. Or how to cut down palm trees in Miami. I don't know, and it doesn't matter. I don't need to know what you're doing. The idea is just write down what you're doing and where you're doing it, and that's how people are going to find you. Because what happens is people go to Google, they go to YouTube, and they say, well, you know, how do I trim my tree? And then they find your video, which, again, you're not doing anything extra because you were already going to do it. All you're doing now is scaling it. So, again, I don't need to know your skills. It doesn't matter because all you have to do is film it, title it, and then solve a problem that people have, and everybody has problems. People want good food. Maybe your food tastes the best. Maybe you have organic food. Maybe your food is sustainable. Maybe you're in an ice cream store. I don't know what it is, but the point is start thinking about your business. How can I scale it? An example with me is my whole business that I do now is essentially scaling people asking me questions. People would always come to me for advice. They'd always ask me questions. I'd get all these emails from people. And then I thought, well, I could answer one email that reaches one person, or I could do one YouTube video, or I could write one article, or I could do a podcast that reaches so many people. So I have posts that I've read by hundreds of thousands of people, right? Well, that's scaling my knowledge. That's all I've done. People are searching for solutions to problems. The mindset shift to make is that you have solutions to problems. Even if you're a lawyer or a doctor, you can do this stuff. And people think, well, how can I be a lawyer and scale my knowledge? Well, I had a really highly successful law blog, and I worked in a really sort of small niche area of civil rights litigation, especially police misconduct. So I'm one of the few people in the country who really understands that police officer violate the law when he hit somebody with a police baton or when he used that taser. That was my specialty. But what I would do is when I had a client, I would do legal research on solving problems, and then I would strip away anything about that client, and I would just publish the law, because law is law and facts. That's what legal analysis is. What are the facts of your case? What's the governing law? And then oftentimes they work together and in tandem. So it's not that simple. But oftentimes people are just looking for the law and then they would find it. If you are any kind of information professional, real estate agent, people want to know, what's the mortgage rate? What does it mean? What is a point on a mortgage? I mean, I don't know what the point on a mortgage is because I rent rather than buy my house. So if I wanted to learn this stuff, I would type in, well, what does it mean to have a point on a mortgage? If I find your side of your video, well, who am I going to look to hire? Who am I going to look to refer to me to someone else? You, because that's how I found you. And how did I find you? You answered a question I had. So make that guerrilla mindset shift. Record everything you do. Don't think, well, it's not good enough. If you have a smartphone, you have better video cameras than the film studios had in the 60s. All those sitcoms you watched growing up, your stuff is even better. Again, I don't know what you're doing. Start thinking of ways to steal it. Start thinking of how you can be a producer rather than a consumer. Those are going to be big ways to help you make more money. Another mindset shift to make is skate to where the puck is going. Now, what does that mean? Well, Wayne Gretzky is the greatest hockey player who ever lived. Some would say he was the greatest athlete in his sport, and that Michael Jordan was the Wayne Gretzky of basketball. When people said, well, why are you such an amazing hockey player? Gretzky said, a good hockey player plays to where the puck is. A great hockey player plays to where the puck is going to be. What you want to do is get to the market before it's a market. Go to where the puck is going, not where it is. That's how you can make real money. Have you noticed, for example, that there are juice bars springing up on every street corner? There are parts in New York and San Francisco and LA where there are as many juice bars as there are Starbucks. Well, what happened? Joe Cross released a documentary called Fat, Sick, and Nearly Dead. And in that, he chronicled his health and weight loss transformation. That came out, I don't know, 3 or 4 years ago. And when this documentary was released, people saw major economic opportunity. I'm one of those people. I saw that documentary over 3 years ago and I said, this is going to be big. Juicing is going to be big in the U.S. Now, juicing had been big before from Jack LaLanne and from The Juice Man, but it sort of died down. I saw this book and I said, go, do it, get into juicing. So I did. I started a website about juicing. I wrote a book about juicing. I did affiliate marketing for juicing. And I ended up making a pretty nice living off of just that juicing website. So what happened? Well, I saw where the puck was going to be. I saw that juicing was going to be big. Juicing is still big. But right now actually might be a little bit too late to get on it. That's why you want to think, where is the market heading? Have you watched a movie? Have you seen an advertisement? Maybe it gave you an insight into a new trend. It doesn't matter. And then sometimes you can reverse trends. If you look at Nike, Dove, every large corporation caters to women. Everything now is about women's empowerment, which is great. I support women's empowerment. But who's being neglected? Men. There aren't pro-men messaging out there. The kind of mindset is, well, men are alone. If you're a man, you just got to figure things out. Shut up. Don't complain. You're a crybaby. We only care about women. And that's an underserved market. GQ, Gentleman's Quarterly. They hired a staff writer who used to work at an anti-man website. This woman's job was to talk about how evil men are and how bad men are. Now she works for a man's magazine. So men are underserved. I know that because men are primarily my market. They are an underserved market. So if you can find a way to market to men and to deliver products and services to men, that's going to be a booming market and it's going to get even bigger over the next 10 years. So again, think about scaling yourself. Think about where that puck is going. What is going to be the next big thing? And how do you figure that out? You think like a producer rather than a consumer. When you watch a movie and you think, wow, the juicing is going to be cool, don't just think, well, I'm going to go buy a juicer, which is what I did. I bought a juicer, but then I thought, how can I get in on this? That's what you want to do. That's what it means to skate to where the puck is going. Another powerful mindset shift you can make is to become a trusted authority. Now, when we grew up, we were taught that only some people were allowed to be authorities. You had to wear a lab coat. You had to have a degree. That isn't the way it works today on the internet. If you want to become an authority and you put the work in and you can demonstrate that knowledge, you can become a trusted authority. How do you become a trusted authority? Well, if you have the answer to a problem, you are an authority on that problem. That is all it means to be a trusted authority. Why do you go to doctors? Because they understand problems. They understand diseases. The same thing. If there's a problem people are having, you can solve it. You are a trusted authority. That's all it takes. Now, of course, it's more difficult than that. You have to put the study in and you have to put the work in. But by now, you already know this. By the way, don't tell people you're an expert. Show people. And that's where those YouTube videos come in handy. If you lost 20 pounds of fat, well, now you know how to lose 20 pounds of fat. You're a trusted authority. But to gain that trust, you got to show, don't tell. Post those before and after pictures. Post what you did. When you show people, rather than tell them you're an expert, that's how you establish authority. The same is true. There's people who teach music on the internet. How do you show you're a musical expert? You don't say, I'm an expert on music. I know everything on music. That doesn't mean anything today, especially to people on the internet. You show them, you perform, you actually perform and engage in the skill. That's how people learn your trusted authority. Show, don't tell. Now, the great thing about becoming a trusted authority is a cognitive bias called the halo effect. Now, the halo effect can get us into trouble, but it can also work for us. It's just kind of like a thinking shortcut we make. So if someone's a doctor and he talks about politics, sometimes we think, well, boy, that guy must really know a lot about politics because we apply that halo from being a doctor and all that education and everything else. But it really isn't true. There's an astrophysicist, and I like his stuff as much as anybody, called Neil deGrasse Tyson. And he's great at what he does. He's great about talking about the stars. But when he talks about politics or law and subjects that I know a lot about, I just think, well, that guy's kind of weird, you know? But if you don't know about that area, the halo effect kicks in and people think, well, Neil deGrasse Tyson says it's about politics. You know, he must really know it. Well, use that to your advantage. You want to create a halo around you. The way you do that is you got to be professional in everything you do. If you are an authority and you are a trusted authority, you have to demonstrate that authority every day. You have to show people and know what you're doing. When you give answers, be well-researched. Give people solid answers. When you don't know something, just say, I'm going to learn it. Also, be transparent. When people catch you making a mistake, embrace it. Thank people. We live in a very transparent social media society now, and a lot of the old marketing tactics don't work. The old marketing tactic is, well, when people criticize you, ignore it. People won't ignore it. They won't go away. And we all make mistakes. If you're a trusted authority and you've built that halo around you and you're transparent, just say, you know what? Wow, I made that mistake. You're right. Thanks for pointing it out to me and appreciate it. When you do that too, you build a reputation. Warren Buffett, who sometimes is the world's richest man, but he always makes that list. He's way high up there. Put it best. It takes a lifetime to build a reputation and 20 seconds to destroy one. If you go through life with that mindset, you'll do things differently. That's absolutely true. Remember, with transparency, it's going to help you more than hurt you. I, for example, can't be caught doing anything. I've pretty much disclosed everything. Details of my life, my most vulnerable moments, are all on the internet. I don't hide it. So if somebody caught me slipping or maybe I made a mistake, people aren't going to think, wow, we've caught this Mike Cernovich guy. He's such a fraud. We've exposed him. I would just say, well, I forgot about it. And given my track record, people would believe me because that actually would be the truth. And people understand that you're going to slip. Your memory's not perfect. A lot of times people think we're lying when we're not lying. A lot of times you just forget. Details become wrong. But when you're transparent, when you've developed authority in one area, and when you just say, you're right, I was wrong, I didn't know that, you don't lose your reputation, you don't lose your credibility, and your credibility is everything. So some big picture stuff, again, these mindset shifts that you want to make, if you want to make more money, say to yourself, mantras, affirmations, I have solved problems that others struggle with, therefore I have the answers that others need. Tell yourself, I am a content creator. Tell yourself, if I want to be a TV star, I'll start my YouTube channel. If I want to be a radio star, I'll start a podcast. If I want to become a writer, I'll self-publish my own books. Tell yourself, I am a producer rather than a consumer. Remind yourself, my reputation is everything. I will never abuse the trust others have given me. Once you make those guerrilla mindset shifts, you're going to start seeing money and opportunity everywhere. We've talked about saving money. We've talked about making money. So now you want to know, where do I put my money? Investing your money, right? What do you do? Well, before putting your money in the stock market or anywhere else, it is true. It's a cliche, but a lot of these cliches are true. Have some cash set aside. Some people say 6 months. Some people say 12 months. The point is, have cash. Things happen in life. We get sick. We can't make money. Stuff happens. You want that cash available. Next, before you think about buying a stock, you pay off your high-interest credit cards. The interest rate on the credit card is going to be way higher than the return on your investment. And then I'm going to give you some real boring but basic advice that most people don't follow and it gets them into trouble. Dollar cost average into the market at regular intervals. Now, what does that mean? We're going to talk about it more. We're going to talk about intelligent investing. And then this, again, doesn't come from me. It comes from the best. It comes from Warren Buffett. It comes from my friendships with Wall Street insiders. And I have a guy, he's the Europe's hedge fund manager of the decade. And I have all kinds of financial advisors that I've spoken to. Make this shift, the guerrilla mindset shift. Become an investor, not a trader. Now, what I'm going to say is going to outrage a lot of people. And what I mean by that is primarily men. Men get really mad when I say this. I'm so used to it. Every man thinks he's a day trader, and this gets people into big problems. But you're not a trader. You're not going to beat the market. The only way to beat the stock market is if you have an edge. And that means some kind of inside information or insights no one else had. If you're reading a website and they're giving you stock tips, that information has already been filtered down from people at all the banks, people on Wall Street, all the real players have let that filter down. People with that kind of information don't write an article about buying a stock. I mean, think about it. If I knew the Coca-Cola company stock was going to go up by 10%, why would I go write an article on it? I would just go buy a lot of the stock and I'd keep that to myself. Because a lot of people might say, well, how did you know? Did you have inside information? People in the know aren't writing articles. So don't be a day trader. You're going to lose it. Now, a lot of people say, well, I can prove I'm a good trader and look at my last stock trade. But that doesn't look at the whole performance. You have to look at every trade that person's ever made. Now, how often do your friends, and we all have them, they're all expert stock traders, let them show you their whole portfolio. Show me every trade you've ever made in your entire life. Suddenly, you don't hear so much from them. That's what I tell when people say, I'm a day trader, and Mike, you're wrong. I say, show me every trade you've ever made, and then we'll average it out against the market. Well, you know, I got proprietary information. They get real quiet real quick. That's because the real players are on Wall Street. Because after all, why would you be a day trader if you could run a hedge fund? If you're really beating the market, why are you going to play with your own money? Play with other people's money. Play with house money. That's when you make the real big money. So we want to become an investor, not a trader, and I'm going to tell you how to do that. It's real simple. Dollar cost average into low cost index funds. Let's define both of those. Dollar cost averaging just means you buy into the market and low cost mutual funds at regular intervals. You don't time the market. You don't think, boy, I think the market's going to tank, so I'm going to wait. Or, boy, I think it's going to go up, so I better buy now. Or, oh, I read this article on some website telling me that you have to buy now or you're going to be left behind. You just say, I'm going to buy at such and such date. For example, I buy low cost funds every 3 months like clockwork. I don't say, well, maybe the market's going to go up, maybe it's going to go down. I just use discipline, investment discipline. Every 3 months, I buy funds. That's it. Now, sometimes the market's up, sometimes the market's down. That's why it's called dollar cost averaging. You average out, and the way you have to look at it is, if you think things are going to get more expensive, which they are, we have inflation, then the companies selling that stuff are going to go up in value. So you're buying into the market, and the market is always going to go up in the long term. Again, we're going to have corrections. It goes lower, it goes higher. Dollar cost average into low cost index funds. Right? What is a low-cost index fund? Simple. An index fund tracks the overall market. In the U.S., the S&P 500, that's the Standard & Poor's 500, is comprised of the 500 biggest stocks, and it kind of tracks the overall stock market performance. It tracks sort of everything, and that's what you mean by investing in the market. All of those big companies in the long term are going to go up, and you just buy into it every month, right? Or every 3 months. So dollar cost averaging, make this gorilla mindset shift, takes discipline, but you have an abundance of discipline. Again, I know that's boring, but that's the way it works. That's the way the real players are. You know those people that are on TV pimping stocks and saying buy this and buy that? When you actually audit their own portfolios, they have low cost index funds. They dollar cost average into them. That's what they do. But there is one exception. There is one stock you want to buy into when you want to buy into big. And we're going to talk about that stock next. So what is that stock that you want to invest in? That stock is something that only you can know, and it's called You Inc., You Incorporated. So if you talk to some real players, the real deal on Wall Street, they're all going to ask you the same question. What's your edge? Your edge is that inside information, that something that you know that no one else knows. Well, what edge do you have? You have an edge in you, the most valuable stock out there, You Inc. What is it? What is You Inc.? Well, it's you. It's how you view yourself. When it comes to making money, how do you see yourself? You view yourself as a laborer, a worker, a drone, a wage slave, an entrepreneur? There's no wrong answer here. Remember, if you have low feelings of self-worth, no big deal. Chapter after chapter, those can be changed. But how do you view yourself? Well, I'll tell you how I view myself. I view myself as a corporation, and I have to buy stock in this corporation. And just like any kind of corporation, I have to run myself intelligently. I buy new equipment that I need. In my case, that usually means buying information. You, for example, have taken a step in You Inc. You bought Gorilla Mindset. You're listening to it right now. That's proof that you're willing to invest in yourself. You're investing in yourself because you believe you have value. And just as a corporation buys new equipment, machines, and hires employees to increase its bottom line, you're doing the same thing, but maybe you weren't even thinking yourself that way. So You Inc. is your personal brand, and we all have one. Even if you don't run your own company, even if you just work at a job, even if you're a part-time employee, it doesn't matter. You say, I want FaceTime with the higher-ups. What's that recognizing? You have a brand. You want to get noticed. That FaceTime implies there's something about you. If they just see me, if I just get noticed, then big things are going to happen. Well, that's a brand, right? That's all it is. Maybe you never thought of it that way, but that's the way you want to think about it. So then you think about, well, how can you distinguish yourself from everyone else? How can you show that you're different? Differentiation is that big deal. Why do you drink Coke rather than Pepsi? Why do you have a Mac or a PC? If you're reading Gorilla Mindset on a Kindle or an iPhone or an iPad or you're listening to it, well, why is that? Because there's something different about each product, right? Everything is different. Well, you have to differentiate yourself. Who are you? If you're in an office, how are you different from everyone else in your office and how do you show it? Again, go back to become a trusted authority. This isn't just stuff that you can apply if you own your own business. You can apply this to your own companies. You can apply this in any kind of context. Well, how are you different? How do you differentiate yourself? What do you do that no one else can do or no one else will do? Maybe you show up earlier, maybe you stay later, maybe you offer more value. I don't know, but think about how you can stand out rather than how you can blend in. And that's how you become your own personal brand in any kind of context. That's how you build You Inc. Building You Inc. is just about investing in yourself, is viewing yourself as a money-making machine, because that is really what you are. And again, you got to be different, and that's hard, because we're taught from birth to conform. Do what everyone wants you to think. Live by others' expectations, but you know what's coming by now, right? Those mindset shifts you made earlier on have completely changed how you think about things. But I'll give you a warning. When you become You Inc., and you differentiate yourself, and you become a trusted authority, you're going to stand out, and that means you're going to get haters. You're going to get a lot of haters. There are entire websites devoted to just nothing but hating about me, gossiping about me, talking about how I look in a picture. That's the name of the game. But you have to ask yourself, are you going to live for yourself or are you going to live for haters? Because ultimately, when you don't take action, when you don't do something, when you're afraid of being rejected, you're saying, I'm not going to live for myself. I'm not going to live for my friends or my family. I'm going to live for haters and negative people. And is that who you want to live for? It's not who I want to live for. And then a kind of a pithy way to put that is from one of my favorite books. I recommend this to everybody. It's called Choose Yourself by James Altucher. And Choose Yourself is a raw look at today's economy. He works at a staffing company. By works, I mean he's on the board of directors. And he gives you the inside look. Large companies are looking for ways to cut costs. And that means they want to fire you. They want to give you lower benefits. They want you to work harder for less money. And Choose Yourself, Altucher makes a compelling case that the days of doing good work and merely being discovered are long over. Instead of waiting to be discovered, you have to choose yourself. In my own life, I wanted to start a podcast. No one said, Mike, come on our show, come be a guest, come do this. I just said, you know what, I'm going to start a podcast, I'm going to see what happens with it. Ironically, my podcast has more ratings on iTunes than Ask Altucher, which is written by James Altucher, or it's the James Altucher's podcast. So James Altucher wrote a book called Choose Yourself, which is very popular. He has a podcast called Ask Altucher, and I said, you know what, I'm going to choose myself. I'm going to do my own podcast. I don't care. I'll figure it out as I go along. It's actually got more ratings than James. And James, if you're listening in, I don't say that to hate him. Just sort of think it's kind of funny that the ripple effect, right? You never know where things are going to go. So you want to find ways to choose yourself in your own life. Ask yourself, are you waiting for others to recognize and appreciate you? Don't. Take action. Become your own hype man. Become your own marketing man. Become your own PR department. And if you have a goal or desire, wait on no man or any woman to give you a chance. Seize the opportunity by choosing yourself. Another great reason to view yourself as a You Inc. is because there are a lot of tax advantages to that. Even if you have a job, you can still start a business. I think everyone should start a business no matter how young or how old. Get something on the side going. Again, I'm not one of those people who says, quit your job and go try to start a business. Do something on the side and you can. And there's a lot of tax tips. So we're going to talk a little bit about tax advice. And although I'm a lawyer, I'm not your lawyer, so always seek a professional to talk about these tax issues. Let's make a gorilla mindset shift. Plan ahead for your financial future by minimizing your tax bill today. The costs of paying taxes today are astronomical. They are high. Paying taxes today will leave you with substantially less money tomorrow. Your total returns on your investments will decrease because you're not going to have as much money to compound. Compound is what? The eighth wonder of the world. You either understand it or you get crushed by it. Compound interest means that if you get 10% more every year, a bigger amount of money underlying that is going to be a bigger amount of money 10 years from now. An example, if you have $10,000 compounded on a yearly basis over the course of 30 years at a 5% return, you're going to have $43,000. But what happens if you have to pay a 25% income tax? You have that same $7,500, you have that same 30 years, and you have the same 5% interest rate. Well, you're only going to have $32,000. So when you're talking with even bigger numbers, maybe a 10% return on investment on $100,000, you can now see this is a lot of money. So that $2,500 you pay up front ends up being over $10,000 in the long run. That's a big deal. You want to think about how to minimize your taxes. So it doesn't matter if you're in the UK, Canada, Australia, the US, think about how you can minimize your taxes. Now, a great way is if you're in the US is you can start a side business and become self-employed. So that just means if you pay a W-2 at your real job and then you're self-employed, you can deduct things that it costs to run your self-employed business, that little side business. Now, the IRS has a bunch of definitions. I link to all this stuff at gorillamindset.com/money. I'm not going to read all the regulations, but I do link to them. But generally speaking, you can be self-employed part-time. It doesn't matter. There's a lot of women who run Avon stores and other kind of multi-level marketing things from their house. You can have a home-based business. You can have a full business. Just don't think, well, I have a job. I can't have another business. You absolutely can. In fact, most rich people have 7 different sources of income. They have 7 different businesses that they're running. You want to have multiple streams of income. And the way to do that is you set these side businesses. And when you do that, again, you minimize your tax bills because business expenses are tax deductible. Now, what are business expenses? Again, go to gorillamindset.com/money for all the regulations and rules. But generally speaking, if you're running a business to make a profit and you need to buy something for your business, that's the business expense. It can be the miles you put on your car. If you use a home office, you can deduct part of your home office. If you have to wine and dine a client, you can write some of that off too. So there are a lot of different things. In my line of work, I'm able to write off my phone, my MacBook, all this like hosting fees. When I get web design done, I write that kind of stuff off. Logo design work. Right now, I'm in a recording studio to this audiobook. Well, that'll be another tax deduction, right? So as you can see, there are all kinds of benefits to viewing yourself as you, Inc., to becoming a trusted authority, to scaling your knowledge, to starting a side business. There are tax benefits. There are health benefits. Everything is better. So start thinking about your side businesses. With that said, let's talk about some habits and some mindset shifts that you can make. Think about this stuff, kind of stuff, all the time. One is view yourself as an investment. Again, that can be your mantra. This goes back to affirmations. I could just say, I am an investment. I am you, Inc. I am my own company. You can frame all this stuff as a mindset shift, as a habit, as an affirmation. View it however you like. But the point is, view yourself as an investment. Remember, you are the most valuable company in the world. There's only one of you. When you are gone, that's it. Find a way to build yourself up to be as big as you can, to be as great as you can. I know you can do it. A more practical tip is, you know, we all know this, but people don't do it. Don't use credit cards unless you can pay off the balance in full each month. If you can't afford it, don't buy it. Now, it seems simple, but credit card companies, they offer all these incentives to get you to sign up, right? 0% balance transfers, free dining, airline miles. They want to get you caught up. Be very careful. Think about the willpower stuff, right? If you don't have it, you can't use it. Think about the junk food. If you have junk food in your house, are you more likely to eat it? Probably. If you have a credit card and you're really not in the right situation to have it, maybe you shouldn't even have that credit card at all. Another habit is always think about businesses you can start. You don't have to have one, but I have multiple businesses. I have my juicing business. I have the Gorilla Mindset business. I have a seminar business. I have a law business. I have all kinds of different businesses, and my hands are in a lot of different things. So I'm always thinking, how can I get inside businesses? I even think when I meet people, well, maybe we can do business together. Maybe I can invest a little something. Who knows? That's how you want to think. Another one is start saving for retirement today. It doesn't matter if it's a dollar. Just get into the habit of saving a little bit of something every day and then dollar cost averaging in the stock market every month. Remember, don't be a day trader or a trader at all. You're an investor, not a trader. Keep buying. Sometimes you're going to buy high. Sometimes you'll buy low. It will average out in the end. Another habit, and it's kind of a mindset shift too, is differentiate between wants and needs. When you're broke, you don't get to buy what you want. You only get to buy what you need. But we tend to delude ourselves into believing a want is a need. Be conscious. Be mindful. Differentiate between wants and needs. Another tip, and this will change your life, especially if you have a salary job. If you get a raise, live off your own salary, your old salary. You were living just fine off of your old salary. I've made more money this year than I made last year. You know how much money I live off of? The same amount of money as I live off of last year. Every dollar more than I make this year goes right back into the market. It goes right back into my long-term savings. The way I look at it, my life was just fine last year. If I make more money this year, so what? How is it going to change my life? Only if I buy stuff that I want instead of I need, right? That's how you have to think. Now, again, I'm not saying don't enjoy your life, don't indulge. That isn't the point of this book. But the point is, if you're living fine and your life is fine and you get a raise, all that money goes to savings. The same is true as if you receive a windfall, don't spend it for a year. If you got a big bonus at work, maybe an inheritance, or maybe you win the lottery, don't spend it for a year. What's going to happen is you start to think that you have that money coming in all the time, but you don't. It's a windfall. That's why basketball players go broke. That's why actors go broke. That's why people who win the lottery go broke. Let's just say, for example, $1 million appear on my lap. I would say, wow, that's a lot of money. But that's one time. I would want that to last me a long time. But if I took that million and said, boy, I have $1 million, now I can buy a Ferrari, now I can buy this. Well, that isn't $1 million coming in every year. That's a windfall. So just don't even touch it. You were living just fine. You weren't starving to death before you got that money. Just sit on it. And then after a year, if you want to buy yourself something nice, go for it. The same is true as that raise and that salary. If I'm making even more money next year than I am this year, sure, you know, I'll up my lifestyle a little bit, but I won't go all the way into my salary. What I'll do is I'll just up a little bit, but I'll leave a lot of room to spare. That's how you're going to make more money. That's how you're going to save more money. That's how you're going to invest more intelligently. And that's how you're going to have financial freedom. Chapter 10, Mindset is Vision. Change what you see, change what you get. Visualization has been used for centuries by athletes to improve their performance. You can use the same visualization techniques in your own life, and in fact, you probably already are using visualization. Now, a lot of you are thinking, well, I'm not an athlete, why would I do visualization? And I don't know how to do it, it's very hard, I don't play sports, how will it help me? But you do know how to use visualization. Make the gorilla mindset shift. You may think visualization is difficult, but in fact, you've already mastered it, and I'll prove it. Do you think about the past, or do you ever ponder bad memories? When you think about the past, do you involve one or more of your five senses, like sight, sound, taste, and smell? Do you feel happy or sad when you think about the past? Does thinking about the past elicit emotions in you? That is, does it affect your mood or state? Of course, I don't know, maybe you've never thought about the past, but I have. And when I have, sometimes I felt sadness, sometimes I felt regret. Well, all I've done was visualize something, and that changed my body. But let's start talking about visualization and how you can use it to take your life to the next level. Talk about how you can use visualization to achieve your next goals. Use the same concepts and techniques you did when thinking about the past. The only difference is you are treating your dreams as more real than your memories. Now, some of you might think, well, that's corny. I'm not a dreamer. I'm not a daydreamer. I'm a doer. But are your memories true? Are they right? There have been all kinds of studies done on memories. Most of our memories are false. Most of our memories don't actually depict what happened. Our memories are constantly changing. It's constantly being updated. So it isn't a stretch to say that your dreams are just as real as your memories, because chances are your memories are very false. They're biased. And again, there's a whole body of research on cognitive science showing that our memories are terrible. And a lot of times we remember things that actually never happened. So make that mindset shift. Just start to treat your dreams as if they're more real than your memories. And when you do that, think about who you want to be. Where do you want to go? What do you want to do? Remember, skate to where the puck is going? That's just visualization. Where is it going? What is everything going to do? So here's an easy way to do it. When you're thinking about the past and that happens, just tell yourself this isn't real. And instead of thinking about the past, daydream about the future. But when you do that, involve all of your five senses, and you're going to be really surprised by what happened. Here's how you do it, right? Remember your five senses. Can you see it? Can you smell it? Can you taste it? Can you feel it? You want to sense everything, and you want everything to be as real and feel as powerful as possible, and you don't even know what's going to happen, which is one of the interesting things. When you start using visualization, what happens is you meet a higher quality of people. You're thinking, well, how do I even meet that person? Well, it's because you're becoming that new life. You're seeing it first because you have to see it to want it. I'll tell you a story. I was loading up my 1989 Ford Escort to visit my sister on the East Coast. And my dad and I got into an argument as he didn't want me to take the road trip. He wasn't a hater per se, but he's kind of worried, and we grew up in a small town. Would my car make the drive all the way across country? But I didn't know any better. I said, I'm going to do it anyway, and I drove. And when I went there, I hadn't been further than an hour away from my home because we never had a family vacation. I'm not going to say I was the poorest kid who ever grew up because I wasn't, and people have had it way worse, but things like a family vacation were foreign to me. We never had a car that could get further than an hour away from our house without it breaking down. And I remember the car breaking down by the side of the road many times and my dad having to fix it. But I said, I'm going to do it. I'm going to drive. And when I did that, everything changed in my life. When I went to my sister's house, we stayed at her father-in-law's ocean property. I'd never seen the ocean. I'd never even stayed in a nice home. The home I grew up in was furnished with old couches and torn carpet. And again, I'm not here to have a pity party. We've all had it tough. But I grew up poor. I'd never been anywhere nice, and I'd never seen the ocean. And all I remember was I heard the ocean waves crash against the beach. I could smell the salt water. And then that's when I told my sister I want to be rich. And I just knew then nothing was going to stop me. And looking back, it was kind of childish. You know, the ocean isn't even a big deal for a lot of people, and the house was just a timeshare. It only cost a couple grand a year in upkeep fees. But what I would do is I would return to that vision wherever I was. When I was in college and I was frustrated, I would just imagine hearing the ocean waves crash, and I would imagine seeing the ocean. And I don't know how this happened, and that's why a lot of this stuff does seem magical. But somehow I ended up going to law school. Somehow I ended up going to Pepperdine, which is right by Malibu. I can now drop the top of my convertible, and I cruise up Pacific Coast Highway anytime I want, and I can hear that ocean. I have no idea how it all happened, but it all started in that moment when I heard the waves crashing, I smelled the salt water, and I even saw a sea turtle laying eggs at night. That's how you do it, guys. Find out what you want and just visualize it, and things will happen. But to do it, you have to involve all of your senses, and it has to become real. You have to see it to get it. Look for what you want. That's the power of visualization. Right now, we're going to do the visualization worksheet. In order to get the most out of your visualization, you really want to imagine concrete situations. And that's where I was kind of joking about daydreaming. You do want to visualize. You do want to imagine, but it's not an empty daydream. You want to be fact-based, and you want to involve all of your five senses. So what I want you to do is write this out. Where do you want to live in 1, 3, or 5 years? The time frame doesn't matter. It's not my life. I want you to think about your life. What I want doesn't matter. I want you to see yourself in the future and then just write it out. And it could be anything. I'll give you an example. I was sitting on my couch in Venice because I'd wanted to live by the ocean and I had been able to. And I just started visualizing myself writing out of cafes across the world and traveling. I had no idea how I was going to do it, but I just started thinking. I could see myself in a cafe. I could see myself typing. I saw myself traveling, and I didn't know what I was going to do. Some people might call it a pipe dream. But 2 years later, here I am. I'm traveling the world, and I'm working out of cafes. Involve all of your five senses. Remember, sight, feeling, taste, touch, smell. If you want to live by the ocean, just don't dream the ocean. Smell the sea salt. Hear the waves crashing against the beach. See the seagulls flying overhead. Taste the salt from the mist in your tongue. Smell the clean, crisp air. This stuff works, too, if you want to develop a better relationship with your friends, your family, your loved ones. You use the same principles. How do you want to be seen? How do you want your partner, your child, your friends, your parents to see you? Imagine yourself as that person, and again, involve every sense. To reinforce that, use these visualization habits as well. Remind yourself, you are a master of visualization. After all, you can make yourself feel a certain way by thinking the past. Well, why can't you think about the future and make yourself feel a certain way? You can. The past is no more real than the future is. It's all about what you choose to focus on. So treat your dreams as more real than your memories. When you find yourself thinking back on the past, just get into the present moment. Become more mindful. And then tell yourself with that self-talk, I'm going to imagine myself living in the future and then imagine it. Involve all those senses. Learn how to visualize things. Learn how to feel it. You should actually feel emotions cascading over your body, and that's how you really know when you're getting good at visualization. You can actually change the way your body feels. And then finally, take a little bit of time each day to practice visualization. Some people say daydreaming is a waste of time, and I absolutely don't agree. It's a great use of your time. Just do it intelligently and involve those five senses. Remember, you're not going to live a dream overnight, but take a few days imagining where you want to be, and you will eventually live that life. Chapter 11, Mindset is One Day. You now have all the tools you need to live your life. You understand the mental strategies that it takes, like self-talk, framing, mindfulness, and state. You're able to change how you think and feel, leading to improvements in your personal and professional lives. You also realize that the body and mind are connected, and that your lifestyle, health, and fitness all improve your mindset. You know how to start thinking, you know how to make money, you know how to invest money. It's time to put everything together. After all, you want an amazing life. You want a life free from worry. You want to feel good. But to live an amazing life, you must first start off small. You must start off by living that perfect day. Begin visualizing your perfect day in as much detail as you can. If you imagine yourself living by the ocean, hear the sounds of the waves, smell the water, and daydream, and as you do, recognize you're getting closer to your dreams. You must see it to get it. You're going to get what you see. So call me a daydreamer, but a few years ago, I started visualizing my perfect day. Now, my day may differ from yours. Your day may be different, and that's fine. This is my day just to help illustrate how to go through this process. This is the exercise that I absolutely went through, and this is what I encourage you to do. So this is my perfect day. I wake up excited and ready to get to work. I usually have a lot of emails and comments. I want to see how many books I've sold. I like my readers. They don't post negative or stupid comments. Their comments actually edify me and I edify them. I learn from them and they learn from me. I take a shower, I do my brain warm up, and I'm ready to start at work. I get in the moment and I write 3,000 to 5,000 words about whatever comes into my head. I don't write just to impress people or because I hope to get a lot of page views. I stay on a message and I seek to attract like-minded, quality people. When some tech issue or design thing comes up, it annoys me, but I change my state and I recognize that tech and design are part of being professional and that you have to know everything. After a few hours of work of hard training, I head to the gym. I push my body, but not to the point of exhaustion. I leave with positive feelings. My body feels loose and refreshed. I then grab a big juice and some protein powder and I start to recover. I talk to friends, training partners, and then I get back to work for a little bit. More questions and comments pour in and I sell more books. I file away some comments to answer a different day. I think about posts and podcasts to do. I generally want to help people. I like the people who find my site and they like me. We work together for better things. So when frustrations come and I feel annoyed, I recognize that it's not annoyance because it's worth it. I fall asleep next to someone I love, knowing that tomorrow will be another day full of opportunity and enrichment. Now again, your day might be different, but that's how you want to start thinking about it. What happens from the moment you wake up to the moment you go to bed? Answer this worksheet. Again, you got to fill this stuff out. Because if you want to live that life, you got to live the day. The more detail, the better. When writing it out, if you feel stuck, always start with the 5 W's. Who, what, when, where, and why. And that's where we'll start. Who do you wake up next to? Maybe you wake up alone. Maybe it's a man. Maybe it's a woman. Maybe it's your family dog. Maybe it's your child. It doesn't matter to me, but who do you wake up to? What do you do after you wake up? Maybe you pray. Maybe you meditate. Maybe you read. Maybe you play with your kids. Maybe you go take a cold shower. Again, this is your day. I just want to help you think about it. When do you go to work? Where do you work? What do you do? Do you start working immediately? Maybe you get a late start? Where do you wake up? Is it a large city? Maybe a cabin in the woods? Maybe you're in Thailand? I don't know. Why do you wake up? Do you wake up because you have to be somewhere or because you want to be somewhere? Use as much detail as possible. In fact, you cannot use too much detail when you're performing this visualization exercise. Further reading. If you've made it this far into the book, you've enjoyed it. Hopefully you get the same feeling I get when I finish a book. I'm disappointed. I didn't want it to end. But while this book has ended, our conversation's only just begun. I write thousands of words each week, and I have over 100 podcasts for you to listen to. So there are numerous places for us to continue our work together. What you can do is go to GorillaMindset.com. It's the same title of this book. .com. It's going to have a link to all the articles and books we talked about. It's going to have that supplement guide. It's going to have that money information we talked about. It's going to have those posture pictures. Now, some of these are password protected just for you. I don't release it to the public. You only get it because you bought the book. The password is Cernovich, and that's an uppercase C, C-E-R-N-O-V-I-C-H. I also have a podcast on iTunes called the Mike Cernovich Podcast. I also sell a juicing book called Juice Power, and then I also have a juicing website called Fit Juice. So as you can see, we can work together in a lot of different ways, and this conversation is just beginning. So thank you so much for buying Guerrilla Mindset. For more information,